I'm trying to make everybody dance over here. I'm trying to get you guys pumped.
I'm dancing like a maniac.
All right, so this is the second take of the 11th Big Planet Comics podcast, because I just I forgot to record the first seven minutes just the second.
Yeah, we just recorded for like 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys
are on a roll, and it was amazing, and now it's lost.
Whatever forever. You guys say, pretend it's the first time. And who will be saying those things? Kevin, that's me. I'll be saying things.
Nick Dead Heat Liapis.
I guess I'm not Jared Sugarland Express. There
you go. You guys are looking around at the posters in my room.
There are good posters.
You guys are like sisters. Anyway, so
we do have traveling pants.
Yeah, yeah. Let me go through the things at the beginning of the podcast. Let's see. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes,
which you should do.
Yep, with your iPods, and you can check out our webpage, bigplanetcomics.com.
Yep. Interesting.
And if you like us, you can like us on Facebook.
Aw.
And then you can be our Facebook friends. And we'll be real friends forever, and we'll hang out all the time.
Yep.
Jumbo slice.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we'll just get in the news, since I mean we already did it once, but let's do it again.
Oh yes.
All right. So Baltimore Comic Con is this weekend.
What weekend? This weekend?
This weekend.
What days?
When is that? Yeah, yeah. That's what I was trying to figure out before. I'm really bad at math when it
comes
to
this. Is why we stopped recording, because we argued about this for 3 hours.
It's going to be the 20th and the 21st.
Exactly. Oh, that's this weekend.
Yeah, that's this weekend. What month? You'll have to figure out that yourselves.
And what city?
Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Yeah, we were talking. We did a whole thing about The Wire before, but we're not going to do it again.
Where's Baltimore?
That's what Nick said before. But all right, here we go. Let's go through some of these guests. You guys ready?
I'm ready.
You ready?
Nah.
Stan Lee.
Never heard of him. Stanley? Stanley who?
Stanley Tucci.
Oh, hell yeah. From Captain America?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That would not surprise me. Well, it surprised me at Baltimore, actually.
So Stan Lee's going to be there. Stan the Man. You guys know him. He wrote How to Draw Comics by Stan Lee.
Yeah, he wrote Just Imagine Green Lantern.
Right? Yep. And Just Imagine Wonder Woman.
And the Marvel Bullpen. He wrote that.
He wrote some of the Marvel Bullpen.
And most importantly, he's Soldier Zero, right?
Right, right. And
What about Traveler?
Well, Traveler, that one's good because it's about gypsies.
No, that's the other Traveler.
Yeah, okay. So he's going to be there. Neil Adams is going to be there.
Oh, my God.
Well, Neil Adams, you know, Neil Adams, he does Batman Odyssey now, which is not the best book.
Yeah.
He done lost his mind.
I think Neil Adams, no offense, Mr. Adams, but I think he lost his mind a long time ago. I know he has this theory that the universe is not expanding, the Earth is getting smaller.
Oh, this is Neil Adams.
Yes. I can get behind that.
he's got a GIF on his webpage that explains the whole thing.
Wait, a GIF?
Yeah.
So it's GIF. Like an animated sequence like you can watch about.
Yeah,
the
it's
universe.
An animated picture of the Earth getting smaller.
Sold.
Yeah, yeah. That's,
you swayed me with your cunning argument.
It's science, you know.
That's true.
Science is gifts.
I believe it.
He should get on Tumblr if he likes gifts so much. But,
true.
So
what's he actually done that's great?
Yeah, yeah, I should say,
of course.
He's
been around a while.
Of course, Neil Adams did Dead Man back in the day. He drew Batman. And
he kind of relaunched back. Was he concurrent with the TV show, or was it after that?
I'm pretty sure it was a little while after that.
So that's kind of like, so he was taking like Batman from the campy era of the TV show into like, let's get back to some good crime and detective stuff.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
No, sure, whatever.
We're historians with lots of
but I
facts.
I will say his Green Arrow, Green Lantern stuff is really amazing. And
very green.
Yeah, very green. And introduced Speedy to heroin, which is
all we can dream of for our sidekicks.
Right, right. Neil Adams was like, the first one's free, and the second one means you in an alley beating up homeless people with a dead cat.
What?
That's the Justice League Rise of Arsenal miniseries written by J.T. Kroll, issue number 3. What? You read that, didn't you, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, that's a comic.
I actually didn't, because you guys just showed me all the relevant panels, and I was laughing too hard to read it.
That's okay, basically, enough. Have we talked about this already on here?
Well, maybe. If not, no, not on here.
It's worth talking about all the time.
Okay, well, so basically, what happened? Arsenal's kid got killed?
Yeah, and then he got really crazy.
And then he beat up his ex-wife with
a hose.
An extension cord.
Oh, extension cord. Oh,
and then he did a bunch of heroin.
Yep.
He snorted it off of an iPad.
Mm-hmm. Really?
And then he...
Did it have, like, the logo showing, so it's a proper product placement?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think Apple would want that product placement.
Well, they get to choose.
There's an app for snorting heroin off your iPad. There's, like, a little lines on it, so you know how much to use. And then he goes into an alley, and he thinks all these homeless people are Prometheus, who killed his son, I think.
Yeah, and then he beats him with a dead cat.
And he beats him up with a dead cat. But then it ends up they're just homeless people. Cat? I think he just found
him. Unresolved issues.
Same guy who shot the sheriff.
Yeah, yeah.
Bob Marley?
I'm not sure. I think Superboy punched a wall and then the cat died.
Probably. No. Tying it all together, DC. Well,
anyway, but I will say Neil Adams is not responsible for that.
Yeah. He has to really drag him into the dirt.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was J.T. Kroll, and, you know, he's whatever. But he's like the Scott Snyder of JT Krolls.
I'm JT Krolls. That's a powerful statement.
All right. So, but also Jason Aaron is going to be there. And Jason Excellent. Aaron writes what book, Nick?
Scalped.
Yeah, it's not.
I wrote The Other Side.
It's not a Big Planet Comics or Wolverine. Podcast. Yeah, he wrote those too. And he's writing X-Men Schism, which is, I think, one of the best X-Men really things good. In a long time.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Jason Aaron's line will be pretty long at the show because he's got all those X-Men people.
Ooh, that poor guy.
I want to tug on his big beard.
Does he have a bit? Is he beardy?
Yeah, he's very beardy.
Yeah. We need more beardy comic writers.
I feel like it's a new trend. Marvel is basically powered by facial hair.
Yeah, pretty much.
And bald.
What about Bendis?
And baldies.
And baldies.
Yeah, we said facial hair. We didn't say...
Yeah, well, Bendis doesn't have...
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's the opposite of that.
Yeah, he should grow like a Dimebag Daryl kind of thing. Captain Lou Albano.
Yeah.
You know, just something with the rubber bands in it.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, he'd be cool.
Who else? Hit me.
Charlie Adlard.
Oh, yeah, Walking Dead.
Yeah, he draws Walking Dead for a long time
now. Is Kirkman going to be there?
I don't think Kirkman's going to actually be there.
No. I remember seeing him at Baltimore Comic Con in years past and kind of walking past and being like, oh, there's Robert Kirkman.
Yeah, I talked to him at Baltimore Comic
Con. Yeah, and I walked past him while he was signing like a million copies of Image United #1.
Oh, my God, really?
I'm just gonna go ahead and throw this out there. If you guys are listening to this, don't go up to a creator at a convention with a long box full of issues that they've written.
Well, Robert Kirkman's really nice, so he'll do it, but like he's probably like, oh god.
Well, most of them will do it, but don't ask him to sign 70 copies of Walking Dead because it's not nice. Yeah. You get one copy signed, it's a nice memento, you keep it for yourself, and you look at it, you go, oh, that's when I met Robert Kirkman and he signed this thing for me.
And then
you put it on eBay.
Well, you're like, don't write my name on it.
Yeah, don't write my name. Just write two and then leave a blank spot. Best wishes, Robert Kirkman. But Robert Kirkman's not going to be there. We're talking about him a lot. But Dean Haspiel is going to be there.
I like Dean.
Dean Haspiel is,
Okay, keep going.
He's famous for The Alcoholic, I would guess.
Yes, was probably Jonathan one of his Ames big ones. That was a really good one.
That was one of his big ones. And he did The Quitter with Harvey Pekar.
He's done a lot of work with Harvey Pekar.
He did like a Cyclops one shot just recently for Marvel.
Yep, that was awesome.
That was pretty cool.
He's done a lot of his own mini comics, or not mini comics, but like self published stuff, a lot of autobiographical
stuff. Yeah, Billy Dogma. Yep. And he's kind of famous for taking his shirt off.
I've seen him shirtless.
I've seen him shirtless as well. Maybe I shouldn't throw that out there, but I mean.
So maybe that's infamous? Or because are you really famous if everyone knows you do it?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess that is the definition of fame.
But people aren't like, oh my God, Dean Haspiel took his shirt off again. Dean Haspiel took his shirt off again.
Oh, is it hot in here? I need to take off my shirt.
Yeah, yeah. He's a well-built man.
Yep.
Built like a Mack truck.
He's built like a Mack truck. But a lot of people probably don't know, but the show Bored to Death on HBO, the character that Zach Galifianakis plays on that show is based on Dean Haspiel.
Which is pretty inspirational because most comic book people are not famous in any way outside of the comic book world.
No, it's like to us, it's like you think of somebody like Robert Kirkman as being like fairly famous, but Robert Kirkman, he doesn't go to the grocery store and people are like, oh, it's Robert Kirkman. You know, that doesn't happen. I mean, that happens to like Jamie Kennedy and like Dax Shepard.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's really,
that
it's
is
really
why
sad.
Western civilization is doomed.
I assume it happens to like, it doesn't happen to writers at all, except guys like Stephen King or J.K. Rowling or something like that.
But that's even weirder because like, I assume most writers, you don't know what they look like unless you're like looking at the picture on their book or something, and most people don't care.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, I stalk Danielle Steele, if you guys know who that is. I try to stalk her as much as possible.
That's a girl.
I thought it was Daniel Steele.
Yeah.
It makes her feel good.
Oh.
Walter Simonson's going to be there.
Excellent.
I call him Walt.
Good old Walt.
Good old Walt. Nick, didn't you meet Walt Simonson at one point?
Yeah, yeah. Last time I went to Baltimore Comic Con, I saw Walt Simonson sitting at a table, and I was just walking by. It was near the end of the day on Sunday. Nobody was there. People had dispersed. And I kind of walked by. I was like, hey, Walt Simonson, how's it going? He's like, oh, I'm pretty good. I'm like, what are you doing there? He's like, you know, drawing a picture of Thor for some kid. I'm like, yeah, sounds about right. See you later.
Yeah, I believe. What? That's Walt Simonson's eternal existence.
Is that also exactly how he speaks? Because that voice is terrible.
Yeah, yeah. I also walked by Stan Sakai, and he was doing the same thing. I was like, oh, drawing Usagi Yojimbo. Yeah, he's like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, all right, good.
He wasn't drawing a picture of Thor.
No.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure
that would be a great issue, drawing of Thor.
I'm sure it would. Stan Sakai is pretty awesome. I'd like to see Walt Simonson draw Usagi Yojimbo.
I would too. Yeah. Actually, we should get on that.
Yeah, we should get on that.
All right, so when you see him this time, be like, why aren't you drawing Usagi Yojimbo?
I'll text him. He's Wally in my phone. That's what I call him. Yeah. I'll send Louise a letter and see. Anyway.
Memo.
A memo. And also, of course, there are going to be like a bazillion people there, but the last one I have on my list is Nick Spencer.
Excellent.
And can you guys tell people who Nick Spencer is?
Right, it's Morning Glories, Iron Man 2.0. He's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely
He wrote Thunder
awesome.
Agents.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he's sort of still writing Thunder Agents, but yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, because we thought Thunder Agents was being canceled, but it ends up they're going to finish the storyline in a mini-series. Yeah, I think starting in like November or something that. So yeah, that's cool. So, and in addition to that, of course, a bunch of other people, the Harvey Awards are going to happen there as well. And yeah, if you guys want to know more, just go to BaltimoreComicCon.com.
And I don't want to know anymore because it's making me sad because I can't go.
Oh, yeah, Nick's got to work.
Oh, you do?
One of us has to work.
Why don't you go on one of the days that like you're not working? Like yeah, work one day and go the other day.
Yeah, why don't you go on Saturday?
I work both days.
Oh, why don't you go on Sunday?
I work.
Oh. Maybe you can go on Monday and just like pick up swag that people have thrown out in the street.
I better just go buy a rope on Saturday and then Sunday I hang myself.
I bet you could get like
you gotta work Sunday.
You could get a stack of like 500 Green Lantern posters.
I really wanted to finish my collection of ROM Space Knight.
Well, yeah, that's what I like to do. Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit. What do you guys like to do when you go to conventions?
Depends on the show.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, there's a big difference between something like Baltimore Comic Con and something like Small Press Expo.
True.
But, like, these sort of big, sort of mainstream conventions like Baltimore, or, like, New York Comic Con and stuff. I mean,
I usually walk around, and if there's, like, somebody I know, like, famous, and, I don't know them, but if I recognize them, I'm like, oh, look, it's Frank Cho. And if there's nobody there, I'll kind of walk up and be like, hey, how's it going? Shake their hand and then walk away. I really don't want to, like, I don't know. I don't want to be like that guy who just walks up and be like, hey, here's a long box of comics. Sign them, Frank Cho.
Yeah.
Right, right. That's what I was. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to tell everybody this. When you go to a convention, do not take a long box up to somebody and make them sign 70 copies.
You said that already.
Did I say that already?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's worth repeating because it's gauche.
Well, see, we recorded this twice, so I can't remember if I said it the first time or
I think you said it this time.
Oh, well, then it's fine.
It's still worth repeating.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do it. Don't be a Jerkenstein.
It's more exciting if you walk up to a creator and say, this is my favorite thing by you that you've ever done. Because then it's a personal thing. You know, it's important to you, not like I'm about to eBay all this junk and it's just I'm trying to make money off your name.
Well, because it's annoying for the creator and it's annoying for me when I'm standing behind you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I'll just wait in line for like an hour, get up to the end of the line and be like, hey, Robert Kirkman, pound it. And then I walk away.
Yeah. Nice. Well, so what I like to do at conventions is buy lots of like quarter comics, like from the 25-cent bin.
That's what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think last time we went, I got like.
Did you wait to the end of the day and they go down to like a dime?
Yeah. Yeah. Like eight for a dollar.
All in color for a dime.
Yeah. But I like to buy comics that tie into toy lines that I didn't actually own in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like Shogun Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
Crystar.
I think I bought Crystar.
Wow. But I definitely,
every issue.
I definitely read those Crystar.
They're amazing.
And I gotta round out my Atari Force collection.
I finished my Rocket Raccoon collection last time I was there. Nice. That was good. Yeah.
I remember I got the full complete run of Prez.
Oh yeah. Well that's actually like four awesome. Issues. I think it's in my box of comics.
There you go.
did you get some Nth Man?
I did not get Nth Man.
You bought those off eBay.
I did eBay them.
Yeah.
But they're awesome as well.
Anyway, so Baltimore Comic Con, it's definitely worth checking out. It's a good show. I'll say it's very comic centric. Yeah. There are a few celebrities, but they're like it's like Lou Ferrigno and Chuck D and like
Chuck D?
Yeah, I saw Chuck D there one time.
And, walking around or like at a booth?
And no, he was at a booth.
Oh, because it'd be awesome. He was just like, I'm going to Baltimore.
Nobody should go there because it's gonna suck.
Yeah, yeah. Nick's so bitter. All right, so another little thing I want to talk about this week. It's a big thing. I don't know. It's not really news, but a lot of the DC comics are wrapping up this week.
They have to because they've only got one week left before the relaunch.
Yeah, there's only one more week after this week before Justice League number one comes out.
Right. I guess they're sliding Flashpoint number 5 in that week too. But other than that, everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So obviously Flashpoint's going to lead in this whole thing. We don't really need to talk about the new DC universe anymore because we're going to talk about it a lot.
Let's talk about the end of the old DC
universe. Let's talk about the end of the old DC universe. So let's start out with Power Girl.
Power Girl's gone.
Yeah, Power Girl is not going to be back after this.
So. Erased. The character's not going to be
back? The character's not going to be back.
But she's a fan favorite for no apparent reason.
For no apparent reasons.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Really? I did not know.
Reasons.
So, yeah, basically, at the end of this Power Girl comic, I feel like the writer gets a little passive aggressive. It's Power Girl's like, don't worry. We have all the time in the world.
Oh.
Not as good as the end of Doom Patrol was one of the first books to end when they kind of knew that this was happening.
Right.
So Doom Patrol, the last one was like in the next issue. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we forgot.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, if you go with a sense of humor. But that Doom Patrol is a little more funny book in some ways than
it still sucks.
Power Girl, whatever.
So a couple other things ended. Green Lantern Corps ended, but that's kind of going to be the same when the new thing launches.
It was like the end was like Green Lantern Corps will be like this forever.
And Legion of Superheroes ended, but that's going to kind of be the same as well when it comes back.
Also, nobody cares.
Yeah. Well, no, people care. People actually like the new Legion book. I never really read Legion, so for me, it's not really... It doesn't do much for me. But
yeah, I thought it was called Legions on Superheroes. So. Legions on Superheroes. I never read it.
I think that's a Rick Veitch comic.
I was like, I don't want to read that.
Also, Supergirl ended. I actually didn't read Supergirl, so I'm not really sure what happened in that one. Amen. But
she made out with some guy, and then she was like, oh, good times.
But oh, really? Yeah, that is true. Yeah, that is what happened. Never mind. Wow, I did read it.
That's a good ending.
Zatanna ended, and that one's not coming back.
I thought that was interesting, actually. I mean, Zatanna's another, I will say, fan service almost character and popularity, that it's kind of interesting that they're either dropping her. Is she going to be on some other team or something?
I think she'll be in the Justice the Dark. League. Oh, is she in Justice League?
Yeah, yeah, she's in Justice. But, you know, when the comic was about to finish, she was like...
What?
She was at...
Oh, Nick's trying to figure out.
I'm trying to figure out how to say the end backwards, but I couldn't do it.
Danae.
Oh, who cares? also, let's see. So, but
that's
then
what happened.
Some of the more interesting ones, I think the fact that Superboy ended is kind of sad because that's Jeff Lemire.
We miss him already.
It's also sad that the new Superboy is written by Scott Lobdell.
Yeah, that's true.
That is extremely sad.
Yeah. It's not
well,
good.
They found a perfect replacement for Jeff Lemire. Oh.
But this was a good ending. It was great. It wrapped up all of his storylines from the beginning. And had a nice little thing at the end where he was like, you know, I'm happy in Smallville and I'll never leave.
Jeff Lemire?
Well, no.
Superboy. Oh, I see.
It's unfortunate he only got 11 issues, though, to do it. I don't know. I feel like he could have kept this thing going for a long time.
Right.
But it was good.
And about three of those issues were not things that I think he really wanted to write.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, and then, what else? Batman ended. I thought this one was actually kind of a cool ending. Nick, you were talking about what it was about. Why don't you tell people what
it was like a bunch of street kids and they were like, talking about the legend of Batman. They're like, oh, and he had this sidekick and that sidekick, and then he went to this, and then he died, and then he came back, and then at the end, they're like, and now I'm going to write my own Batman story.
It's like, yeah, it's like the most good overviews where they show, like, how much the character's changed over the years, and yet has been still popular and been good in all these different versions and formats and stuff.
Well, I think by sort of telling it through the eyes of these people that are like, oh, we're going to write our own Batman comic, it kind of shows that Batman will always be a part of the public consciousness. Like, there will never right. not be Batman.
Yeah, you know? And that's how it ends. Instead of saying the end, it says never the end.
Yeah, so I thought of all the things that I've seen that have ended, that's been the one that's been the most... As all these DC books have been ending, I'm wondering why they're not doing more like...
Whatever like, happened to the Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, basically, when Superman relaunched in the 80s and John Byrne took over, gave him a mullet. And it was actually good for a while.
Sure,
but right before that, Alan Moore wrote a story called Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, which was kind of like, you know, a culmination of Superman over the decades. And I thought it was a really good story.
Maybe one of the best. It definitely is one of the best Superman stories and possibly the best Superman story ever told.
Yeah. And I just wonder why they haven't done more stuff like that. But I thought this Batman issue was probably the closest thing to something like that. And so if you're a Batman fan, it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. I mean, the basic gist of it was like, you know, Batman will live on. It doesn't matter what he is or who writes the stories or whatever. It'll just be Batman, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely better than I would have thought it was going to be, especially Fabian Nicieza wrote it, I think, and I'm not a huge fan of his, but, you know, I thought he did a good job with it, so.
And I think a lot of these books, they're just, you know, a lot of them had to kind of wrap up their stories before they ended, so they didn't really have a chance to have an issue that
right,
just kind of wrapped everything up.
That's kind of making me nervous. It's like giving the feeling that they didn't give people enough warning. So they've been like, all right, 6 months from now, we're going to do this big relaunch. You got 6 months to, you know, wrap things up nicely, or 3 months, or, you know, how
I
much
think
time
it was like more
get.
Like 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cause I mean, it, you know, perfect example is like a lot of these comics come out two or three times this month.
Yeah. I think Teen Titans is coming out three times in August.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think 98, 99, because they wanted to get to issue 100 yeah. before they finished.
Got hit 100.
Yeah. They don't want to end on 99 and be like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, what else came out? Well, Justice League. That was kind of the weirdest one.
That was that one had it had pretty amazing things. First of all, it skipped ahead kind of a few. I felt like it skipped ahead a few storylines or something. It was like, remember like recently when we just fought all those robots and then we fought this and then Starman fought that and then Kongorilla fought this and then this happened and that happened, which wasn't in the comic. And then at the end, they were like...
So it's just like them like saying, look at all our adventures, what we had, like if they'd had time to have them.
Yeah, but then all the characters that are not going to be around after the relaunch were kind of like Jade was like, oh, I'm going to leave the team. I don't know what to do, but I want to live my own life. I'm not going to be around anymore.
Well, and Donna Troy was like, I thought it was really weird. She was like, I'm leaving as well. And I hope nobody remembers me.
Right? Yeah, yeah. She was like, I'm going to try my best to disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, happening because Donna Troy's being replaced by, I guess, the blonde Wonder Girl, right? Like Cassie Sandsmark
Congorilla said kind of the same thing. He was like, oh, nobody really cares about me. I was in the Justice League for a little while. And that's what he said. And he was like, I'm just going to go back to Africa and nobody's ever going to hear from me again.
Right. So I thought that was a good way to handle it. The fact that, you know, that there's this giant DC universe and you're not seeing every moment of it every second. You know, there's all these other characters that they'll probably be back in a year or two. But, the stories are moving on to someone else.
I think some of them aren't going to be back for a while.
The best of these so far has been, which isn't part of the stuff that came out this week, was Batgirl. Because she had a thing with the what are the plants called where they
poison ivy
in the DC universe where they they're like from
the mercy
plants she got like one of those attached to her, so she saw kind of different potential futures for her, and she saw herself getting old and like having children that were superheroes and like stuff.
But you
like
should
that.
Know that's never gonna happen in comics
because what is it? It basically shows you your ideal life.
Yeah,
that was a plot device that was used in like the second best Superman story of all time, which is For the Man Who Has Everything, which was also written by Alan Moore. Yeah, yeah.
But then like, you know, it did that, and you know, you saw like where she could go in the future, and she was like, "See you guys later," and like winked and like, you know.
That's awesome.
Swung away or whatever, which is cool because she's never going to be around again.
Yeah. Well, maybe she'll be like spoiler or something.
No, she's never going to come back.
No. because Barbara Gordon's going to be back early when this relaunches. So that was pretty much it for this week for the DC books closing up shop. We'll probably talk about the ones next week, too. I mean, it's kind of interesting
how they handle it.
Yeah, yeah. So just one little last piece of news. I just thought this was kind of cool. Over at Marvel, the new Daredevil series just launched, and a bunch of the creators got together and recorded an audiobook of it for like, so fans of Daredevil who are blind can, you know, check out the new stories. And I think they're going to keep doing
every month. That's really cool. Yeah.
So Daredevil creators or just people at Marvel?
Like, well, it's people at Marvel, but it's like a lot of the people that are actually
like Mark Waid
working on Daredevil. Yeah. Like all the panel descriptions are Mark Waid. And then there's like Stephen Wacker's doing some stuff on it, and he's the editor on the book.
That's awesome. That's pretty
and
cool.
And Tom Brennan, who's also an editor, he's voicing Daredevil, and some other names I don't know. Ellie Pyle is Kirsten McDuffie. Jordan White plays Foggy Nelson. And so Marvel pulling up, but then this other guy named the Audio Phantom actually took their file and put like some background music and stuff on it too.
Oh, wow.
And made it more like a
radio play.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And that's cool, yeah.
I mean, it's perfect for Daredevil. I mean.
Is this straight from the comics they're doing?
Yeah. It's just an audiobook of the comics, and I think they're gonna do one every month. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting because like, are they describing the scenes as well?
Yeah. Okay. Mark Waid does all the panel descriptions, and then
but he's not like just reading narration that's already in the comic. He's describing what you see if you'd be looking at.
He's basically reading his script.
Yeah, I think he's kind of reading his script.
Oh, that's a good point because most scripts start with a description of what the artist should be drawing.
Yeah, and I think I've read some scripts of Mark Waid, and he writes pretty detailed stuff. So yeah, it's cool. I listened to a little bit of it, and it was pretty neat. So yeah, it's definitely cool. All right, so let's move on to some viewer mail. All right, we got another letter this week from Mark Miller. Not to be confused with Mark Miller.
The Scott.
Yeah, we've gone over this before, but let's see. So Mark asks us, now that Marvel has announced select titles releasing day and date digitally on Comixology, do you think that A, this will be a trend and more titles will go this way? Or two... Comixology has defeated any competitors, and last, prices will ever be reduced so digital comics are ever cheaper than print ones.
All right, what was the first part?
Let's go through these in parts. Part A, this will be a trend and more titles will go this way. Well, I think it already is a trend.
Like DC's doing it, starting with their relaunch books of all their number ones. Those are all going to be day of release, and then is it a month later they're going to drop prices on that, which ties into the other stuff?
Right, yeah, a month, but like it's kind of confusing because it's not like in September all their books are going to be $3.99 and then in October all their books will be $2.99. It's like in September all their books will be $3.99 and then 4 weeks, like say 4 weeks after Justice League number one releases, then Justice League number one will drop down to...
Right. So basically, the day a comic comes out on the shelf, you can buy it online for the same price as a physical copy of it. A month later, that exact same issue will be discounted on their webpage.
Yeah, $1, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Okay.
So that covers a little bit of the price drop thing, but I think mostly for now, the big two and some of the other people are going to charge the same price for the retail stuff because they don't want to undercut the direct market, which is comic stores, because that's their main source of revenue.
Also true. Marvel started doing it too. I think Amazing Spider-Man is day.
Basically all the Spider-Man titles and all the X-Men books just went day and date. I think they'll slowly start rolling out the other stuff.
So yeah, I definitely think it's a trend, because I think that's been one of the biggest complaints with people is like, how is this at all convenient if, you know, you have to wait to get something? Like, who's going to remember to, you know, everyone wants the convenience of it. It's like, oh, I want to get that right now. Oh, I can't, because I could go to a store, but I'll get it, you know, 8 weeks later or whatever. So,
but I think the second question is actually really interesting too, is, you know, has Comixology basically defeated all the competitors already?
Pretty much.
Well, what's the group of like smaller publishers who banded together to do a site? Is that Comixology?
Comixology.
Is it?
Yeah. I think almost everybody sells.
So it's just
sells...
that Marvel hadn't been on Comixology, but they had done their own version.
Well, most of the places have their own stores, and then they also do stuff through Marvel was already doing stuff through Comixology.
Oh.
But now they're doing the day and date. And the DC stuff will be coming out through Comixology as well.
Right.
As well as iTunes.
They killed it.
Yeah. But basically, we'll have to wait and see what happens with DC. I think they're going to sell a lot more titles through iTunes. And then I think you'll see a lot more people jumping onto that, because people know iTunes.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's already connected to their devices and they're kind of used to it. And Apple already has everybody's credit card number.
that helps.
But yeah, as it stands now, I mean, Comixology definitely has the market cornered.
True.
And as far as prices reduced so digital comics are cheaper,
that's interesting.
Most of the times now, I feel like when something's released new, it's going to be the same price. But then like places like Dark Horse, they do like huge sales, like dollar comics and things like that. So I think you'll see that on back issues.
But
and
Dark Horse is interesting. You mean for digital versions or like
for digital versions? Yeah. Oh,
okay. Because I was just thinking for them for print, like they have their own distributor network sort of, and they've got their own store. So that might have been a different thing. But for digital, that's interesting. Like, what stuff have they discounted?
Well, they'll just be like, you know, like old Hellboy stuff will be $1.
So they're
like
just doing
they do like
theme
sales and stuff like that. But I think day and date stuff is probably going to stay at the same price for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the printing costs are actually not a big part of the actual cost of everything. I think the actual making of the comic is more expensive than printing.
But it's more like, you know, paying for people to write it and draw it and edit it. That's where most of the money goes.
Yeah, the overhead is not much lower, especially when you're being distributed through somebody else. Like, iTunes gets like 30% or something like that. So
something crazy.
They want to test the waters for a while. I mean, right now, you know, a lot of people are saying the digital thing is still a very small sliver. You know, it's like something like 1% of total comic sales or something like that. So.
I think they said it grew quite a bit last year, but it was still a minuscule amount. I think the thing that'll be more interesting is day and or just when you buy a comic, either digital or print, and you get some way for the same price, a way to get the other version of it. Like, here's a comic book and a download code, or here's the download code and, you know, get a discount on buying the comic. I think that'll be the real evolution. Like, you know, vinyl. That there is a niche market basically for this collector vinyl stuff, which most people don't use. But if you want, you can also get the download code for the digital.
Yeah, which I think is how it should go. And I think DC's kind of testing that out with Justice League number one, which they're going to have a version with a download code, but it's going to cost $1 more.
That's what I find interesting.
So, that's the comics industry is so backwards sometimes. I mean, if you go into a record store and you can buy a record or one that's $1 more with a download code, that's like something they would never do.
Right.
Just because
like,
it doesn't
I'll
make any
buy
sense.
Buy this record because I want it and then go find it illegally online.
So yeah. It's what the DVD industry was trying to do with like the sort of digital copies that they give away. But they don't charge extra for them because that's stupid.
That's true.
You own the movie, you know. Basically, all they're doing is saving you a step. And basically, by giving you a download code, they're just saving you from having to scan your comics.
Right, but think about it. Like, iTunes held on to digital rights for a really long time, preventing people from, like, you know, having more than 4 copies of their music. And
well, that's DRM. Yeah. That's a whole other thing.
That's
true. I mean, it's like...
We'll be talking about it soonish.
Yeah, yeah, so. Definitely.
We'll talk about something else.
We'll be talking about it from under a bridge when we don't have any jobs. But right. No, Mark, thanks for the question. That was actually pretty interesting. And if you guys have questions, you can always send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, and we'll read them on the air.
Probably.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, unless they're, you know, really dirty or something. Well, then Nick will probably try to get us to read them.
Yeah.
I'll read them.
we will read them, just not on the
air. I will send you a personal email.
He'll read them at home. Let's move on to reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
Still cracks me up.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good song. I need to change the lyrics though.
Hey, Scott Lobdell.
We're working on alternate versions.
Yeah, yeah. We already talked about how Scott Lobdell's racist, right? Yeah, we talked about that last week.
We did.
He's not really racist, but he's racist. There wasn't a lot of new stuff this week, but I do want to say that there were a couple number twos that we're not really going to talk about that much, but Daredevil number 2 came out. It was just as good as Daredevil number 1.
Incredible.
It was so good. Captain America number 2 came out, and that was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yep.
And I feel like there was some... Oh, and the Mark Waid, Mike Waringo Fantastic Four collection volume 2 came out. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I love the first one. So.
That whole run is great. Yeah.
The one that Nick and I recommended everybody read.
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin now likes.
Well, I'm reading it. It's there now.
I'm just saying that you're throwing your opinion.
I will say that the second volume of the FF stuff has the controversial Doctor Doom wears somebody's skin as his suit
thing. Not very controversial. He definitely did that.
Well, I mean, but some people found that it didn't really fit
for the tone of Fantastic Four. It was a step beyond.
It wasn't like in the comics, like other people objected to it. Like other villains were like, you probably shouldn't wear human skin.
You should tone it down a little bit.
Whoa, I mean, you're freaking me out, dude.
It was like 2004. They're like, we remember when you cried after the Twin Towers were destroyed.
You're a big soft.
And now you're wearing skin. Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy.
Who needs a hug?
But there definitely was some new stuff this week. So let's start out with the 99 Days hardcover. This is part of the Vertigo crime line.
Which is getting increasingly large. Like, did we mention last week that History of Violence was reissued in that format? So it is now
I thought that was kind of interesting. And it seems like there's a Vertigo crime book probably every 2 weeks or...
Yeah.
I think they do about 2 a month now.
Because the initial ones come out in hardcover for $20 and then they re-release them, like, almost all books in softcover for $13. So between the new hardcovers and the re-releases, is it one every week?
Oh, maybe. Quite a lot. Yeah, there are a lot of them coming
out. Anyway, back to 99 Days. I feel like this comic...
Well, hold on. This was written by Matteo Casali, and the art was by Christian Donaldson.
I think Nick has something to say about it.
Yeah, go ahead, Nick. Well, why don't we let Jared tell people what it's about first, and then Nick can complain about it.
All right, so like all these crime things have been coming out. They're trying to do it with a slight twist, or, you know, just not a straight-up thing. So this one is... A young detective, black guy in L.A., who's now a detective with the L.A. police, who grew up in Rwanda and was heavily involved in the horrible ethnic cleansing where he was, as a young kid, killing people with a machete, forced to do it, and is now caught up in a murder investigation where someone has been killed with a machete in current times.
Also involves Bloods and Crips.
It does involve them.
Yeah, and so, Nick, I know you had some problems with this. I think they kind of mirrored my problems, but go ahead and tell people what you thought about this.
I was just going to say that I feel like it would take me 99 days to actually read this because I kept falling asleep. I fell asleep 4 times reading this. Like, I was like, granted, I was reading it at like 3:30 in the morning, but still, it was
really
boring. What
does that have to do with you getting sleepy? I don't know.
It was really boring.
I had some problems with that. I just thought that the writing was very, for the subject matter, I thought that a lot of the writing was very cartoonish. It was
like in what way?
Like all the way the gang members spoke and stuff. I thought it was it was just cartoony. I don't know. It just really didn't appeal to me. I can't repeat a lot of lines because there's a lot of really foul language in it.
Yeah,
but it just felt very cliched and it kind of took me out of the story a lot.
Yeah, it was like some random guy who knew nothing about gangs who kind of heard about gangs on the like radio or something like. Wrote a comic about gangs.
Right. It's like he listened to an NWA album and was like, oh, this is what gangs are like.
You should wear neutral colors. And it's awful.
Yeah. I really couldn't get into it. I will say the art was pretty strong. And I felt like the plot of the book was good. And, you know, it wasn't a terrible book. It was just I thought the dialogue really took me out of it.
It was just boring.
Well, the thing I think about is like I think the Vertigo crime line is one of the strongest things, you know, just as a group that's come out from anybody in recent times. And this one, I say, is there's definitely been some missteps, like the Chill or some other ones where it seems kind of out of place that they're doing something that doesn't quite fit. But I say this one is the weakest one.
It's definitely not representative of the rest of the line. I mean, the rest of the line's been pretty good.
That's what I'm saying. It's like they've been good to great in this one. And I think especially in those terms was a big disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go out and pick up a Vertigo crime book and you haven't been reading them, this is definitely not the place to start. I would say read Sickness in the Family is a very good one. Ratcatcher is great. I love Bronx Kill. Yeah. I mean,
the Executor, they're all pretty good.
Yeah. They're all, I mean, most of them. Yeah. Or Area 10. Yeah. I mean, they've been really solid. So
anything but this.
You know, my thing about this one, I actually read the whole thing on like Sleepy Nick. It seemed like a really good idea, like especially contrasting, you know, like what would this do to someone who grew up in such horrific violence and then went into a different culture with different horrific violence? And it just seemed like he didn't live up to the premise. I could see like this being pitched as like a comic book or a movie and it being like, oh, this is the best high concept ever. And it just
they kept talking about it, but they never like really explored it. Like, I mean, I read this at 3:30 in the morning, fell asleep. But I woke up in the morning after sleeping for 8 hours, tried to read it again, and fell asleep again.
All right.
Touche.
Yeah, so I would say probably nobody really recommends this.
Yes, and, unfortunately. But yeah. Read all the other vertical.
Yeah, influence. Definitely. Definitely read the other one. All right, moving on to a book that I think we all like pretty well. Damaged number one.
Indeed.
Yeah, so Damaged is a new book from, what's the company? Radical?
Radical, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Radical.
Radical. Radical, they do, like, some of their stuff's really good. Like, they Time Bomb was really good, and Hotwire is really cool. Some of the other stuff I don't like so much, but I thought this book was really cool. Nick, why don't you tell people what Damaged is about?
Oh, it's about a an ex-cop who's kind of a vigilante, sort of like Punisher kind of guy.
Kind of like the Punisher.
Yeah, and he's, you know, killing criminals and burning them and stuff like that. But then the other guy who is his ex-partner, or he might actually be his brother, I don't know. Anyway, the other guy is like an old cop who's about to be retired and be replaced by a younger, hipper cop. And that's a basic setup, and then they're kind of at odds.
Yeah, it's like the Punisher if the Punisher's like ex-partner is still on the police force and is wondering what to do about it.
Well, I feel like it's the Punisher told from the point of view of the police.
Right.
It's not like the guy who's the vigilante is like the good guy character. And no. I don't feel like, I mean, he's kind of this crazy guy that these guys are trying to catch. And it was when I started reading it, I wasn't too into it. And then Nick was like, no, I read the whole thing. It was really good. And I went back and I read it. And I actually really liked it. It was a lot of setup.
Right.
There's a lot of cool political stuff in there, sort of about how the police force works. And it was intriguing. And there's a little twist at the end that Nick, I think, spoiled just a second ago. But
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
No, a possible twist.
Yeah, no. So, yeah. So Damaged One, I mean, there's not a lot to say about it. It was pretty simple, but I thought it was really cool.
It was great art by Leonardo Manco, who he drew War Machine.
Right. Yeah, I recognize the
first
good.
The first storyline of War Machine. It's great art.
Yeah, I forgot to say who wrote and drew it. You said Leonardo Manco. I didn't realize it was written by David Latham.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I didn't notice that until after I'd finished reading it. When I went back, I was like, oh, that explains why this is good.
Yeah, Latham, of course, wrote Stray Bullets and Young Liars and the horribly underrated
30 Days of Night.
No, not the 30 Days of Night thing he did, but Sparta USA.
Oh, right.
Which was a great miniseries, and because when DC canceled their Wildstorm line, they just never released a trade of it, which is really unfortunate.
Yep.
Yeah, but so Damage number one was really cool, and let's move on to the Halcyon trade. This is written by Mark Guggenheim and Tara Butters, and it's drawn by Ryan Bodenheim and Mark Engelhart.
It was awesome.
It was.
I read this in issues. I haven't read the trade, obviously, because I read the issues, but I want to reread it because it's kind of cool because it feels like Watchmen. That sounds kind of like
that's lofty.
A good opening statement.
It's a very lofty praise, but you mean
like the quality of the paper.
You heard it here. Nick says Halcyon is like Watchmen but better.
You heard it here first, folks.
No, it's like Watchmen, and it's like new heroes that you've never heard of, and there's a really cool idea behind why the heroes are getting into a conflict with each other, and it ends with like, you don't know who to side with. You're like, should I side with the good guys? Should I side with this other good guy? Like, you know, you're not sure.
The basic premise of the book is that violence starts dropping around the world and basically gets to the point where there is no violence. And so these superheroes don't have anything to do. And a lot of them start realizing, hey, I really like being a superhero. And yeah.
But more like, I like being a superhero because I get to beat people up, not because like I stop trains that are about to go off a cliff or something.
Right.
So.
Well, the basic thing is there's a moral dilemma. It was like, should we have some kind of magical thing that makes people stop fighting, or should we? Is that not cool? You know.
It's interesting. The art's great. It kind of reminds me. It's of that sort of Chris Burnham, Frank Quitely kind of school of art.
Yeah, where it's like it's a thick line on the outside of the characters, but it. I don't know.
I think, but it's highly detailed, and it's like a Juan Jose Reap, or but it's very cool art.
It's
and,
great.
It's got a lot of fun characters.
Yeah,
it's
the
like
characters
a space,
are cool.
Like an ape from outer space, and like a, I don't know.
There's
like
a Batman type character who's just like the vigilante, but except he kills everybody.
And then there's the Superman type character, but it's a woman. Like the main superhero of the book's a woman,
and they make the obvious step of having the Superwoman type character and the Batman type character have a relationship romantically, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like the Authority. Except with a woman.
True.
Yeah, but no, Halcyon's cool. It's definitely like a different kind of superhero book, and it's definitely worth checking out, I think.
Yeah, and it has a good ending. Like I reread it for the new one coming out, and I noticed that in the beginning it refers to an alternate dimension, like all, you know, superhero universes, which led me to the idea that, you know, this could certainly do a sequel to this or something else with these characters. So But awesome. Anyway, as a story, that was very good.
Yeah, good stuff. Definitely worth checking out. If you like stuff like Irredeemable,
right,
or like Watchmen, and but it's of course better than Watchmen.
Better, of course,
of course. Then yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. Like stuff like Astro City. It's just kind of like a different take on superheroes.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's interesting. All right, moving on to another thing that's a different take on superheroes, but is the best thing ever. The Invincible Compendium that came out this week. Invincible is by Robert Kirkman, who we've talked about quite a bit. And it's drawn by Corey Walker at the beginning, I think, and then Ryan Otley's been drawing it for forever.
But yeah, this is pretty much similar to the Walking Dead compendium, which they did for the like early part of... when did it come out? 2 years ago now?
Something like that.
Yeah, and it sells very well. It's basically a... I don't know.
It's like the first 48 issues or so.
Two issues thick? How thick is this book?
2 issues thick.
2 inches.
Yeah, I mean, it's a giant book. It's like... What is it? It's like 60 bucks and it's...
65.
And it's 8 trades. So if you're planning on reading Invincible, it's a great way to start. And Invincible, I should say, is a book about like a young guy that's got powers. And
Superman had a son who has the emotional problems of Peter Parker.
Right. And then there's a huge twist in what's the second volume. So about a quarter of the way through this that I don't really want to give away. But
this book to awesomeness.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. They do a lot of good character stuff, sort of like what it's like to deal with relationships when you have superpowers. And
it's definitely one of, if not the best superhero comic ever written.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just great. I don't know what really to say about it without there's so much plot in the Invincible books. Also, I'll say it's bloodier than Walking Dead,
which is amazing.
But it's definitely one of the bloodiest books I've ever read. But there's so much payoff. It's fantastic. Invincible's great. If you're not reading it, buy this and you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, you will buy the rest immediately.
Yeah, yep. It's so good. It's such a soap opera, but in the best kind of way.
Right.
Yeah. So that's Invincible, the compendium.
Is one of the best bargains you'll ever get.
Yeah, definitely. Anything. Yeah, definitely. Let's move on to Pariah number one. Did you guys actually read this?
Yeah, I did.
All right. So Pariah number one was written by Aaron Warner and Philip Gillott, and the art was by Brett Weldelay. Actually, when I was reading this, I was like, oh, this art looks a lot like Brett Weldelay. And then it was Brett Weldelay.
That would explain.
Well, Nick, you read it. I mean, I read some of it, but why don't you tell people what it was about?
Well, it's kind of like a universe where all these people were born that were like super smart and they're kind of outcasts, pariahs, if you will, but they're, people think they're all kind of terrorist cells and they're kind
of...
Yeah,
they're very much the Rise of the Mutants in X-Men.
Yeah, yeah. Except instead of like all having different powers, they're all just like super smart.
Yeah.
And so they can create devices like on the fly. Like the main character in this is one of those. And he's wondering like, are people going to start coming after me and what should I do? And he's like, it's mostly about his everyday life. He's like, I kind of like this girl.
Yeah, he's in high school. He's got typical problems. Yeah.
Stuff gets out of control. And
yeah, it's a very interesting universe setup. It's, you know, I think I'll go back to the thing. It's like if all the X-Men mutants were just super geniuses, that was their power.
Yeah.
But yeah, it had like the interesting idea of like, you know, there is the group of them who are all working together at a lab. And yet there's this kid who's just trying to be in high school at the same time. But they says at one point something like, you know, I think all the time, I'm the super genius. I'm always thinking about stuff. But at times it's almost like my brain is thinking for me and I just go along with it, which I thought was an interesting, like, if you're so smart, you're just doing stuff on instinct or there's other parts of your brain you don't really know how to control. And I don't know if they'll do anything with it, but I thought it was interesting.
Like super, super smart, but socially awkward, you know.
Very much so.
Now, did you, like, for me, I felt like when I was reading it that it seemed similar to a lot of other things and that there have been a lot of books and TV shows that have come out recently about, you know, a bunch of people that are born with superpowers all at once, like heroes and rising stars, right. And like Morning Glories is like that a little bit. I don't know. It just it didn't really grab me. I can't really point out anything that was like bad about it.
Yeah,
it's just
slightly derivative.
Right.
I'm interested in where it goes from here.
Yeah, I think this is like a setup issue that doesn't have like the big punch to draw you in. It's like an older comic where like by issue 2, 3, or 4, this will be amazing, but. You know, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that makes it more like a newer comic. But, yeah, if it was an old comic, they would have been in outer space on like the third page.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. Not super old.
But I mean, it was an okay start. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of stuff out there like this now. I mean, for me, I'd much rather read something like Morning Glories or...
Oh, definitely. But there's potential in this. So hopefully we'll be going somewhere cool.
We'll see. And Wildlay's art's decent. I mean... Yeah. Is he also drawing Spontaneous right now?
Maybe. And no, he did he draw The Light?
Oh, he drew The Light, and right. Of course he drew Surrogates.
Oh yeah,
which was great. Yeah, those are both really good. So those are worth checking out. So let's move on to setting the standard. This is an Alex Toth collection. It's basically, if you guys don't know who Alex Toth is, he drew Zorro back in the day. He did the character designs for the Super Friends cartoon.
Thunder the Barbarian, was that him?
That might have been him. Was I think Kirby? Thunder the Barbarian might have been Jack Kirby. I get that and Herculoids mixed up.
But he might have worked on it too. Like, yeah, there's some crazy stuff.
And he designed Space Ghost. And, there you go, Space Ghost. Yeah, I mean, he did tons of comics. But this is a book of his comics that were published by Standard in, was it like 54 and 55?
52 through 54.
52 through 54. So it's a lot of sort of the comics that were popular at the time, like war comics, romance comics, yeah, horror comics.
Were a different world in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely like the superhero comic was kind of on its way out for a while, definitely during this time period. And EC comics were very popular in the early romance comics and the horror comics. Yeah, I mean, it's Alex Toth.
This book is big, too. It's a lot of stuff, and it's only, what, $40, and it's probably, what, 300, 400 pages?
Yeah, and it's a lot of comics. And I don't know, it's like, if you don't know Alex Toth, definitely look at it. His art is beautiful. He's probably one of the best draftsmen in comics.
I just realized that how long ago this was actually created. Like, he feels like such a modern artist in such a way that I just forget that this was so long ago.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're interested in older comics at all, this is definitely a great collection to pick up. I'd say it's on par with like the Steve Ditko collections that have been coming out from Fantagraphics as well. Oh, this is put out by Fantagraphics, I should say.
Right.
And
like Blazing Combat, you know, if you're looking back at some classic old comics.
Right. And it's a really good companion book to the Alex Toth Moore art book that came out like a couple months ago. Yeah, Alex Toth is one of the best of all time. I mean, that's basically all there is to say about that.
Enough said.
Yeah, yeah. So moving on to Spider Island, Amazing Spider-Girl number 1 by Paul Tobin and Pepe Larraz. There was a Spider-Girl, Spider Island, if you guys have been listening to the podcast, we've talked about it a little bit. Basically, everybody in New York's getting spider powers.
And by that, we mean Spider-Man powers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not like power to like catch like roaches in their web or something like that. But and this is about Spider-Girl and how she sort of deals with that. And it's interesting, Spider-Girl... What I've always liked about the recent Spider-Girl comics is that Spider-Girl is a very low-level character, and while other bigger things are going on, she's kind of dealing with her own stuff.
Yeah.
And Paul Tobin was writing a Spider-Girl series. I think it lasted about 8 issues, and it was great, but it was just one of those things that, you know, just nobody read.
Yeah, it didn't sell very well.
Yeah, but Marvel, doing what they do every once in a while, you know, they're willing to give things a second chance. I think they gave Agents of Atlas like 17 chances, you know? Yeah, so I think if they see quality in a book, they're willing to give it another chance. And I feel like that's what they did with this. And it's good.
It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. Nick, why don't you, I mean, I sort of told people what it's about, but I mean, there's more to it than that.
Basically at the end of the Spider-Girl series that, you know, got prematurely ended, she got her spider powers back and she's like, oh, wow, I have these spider powers again. And this storyline is kind of about her adapting to having spider powers and dealing with the city who has spider powers. And she's like one of the only people that actually knows how to use her powers.
Oh, so good point.
She's kind of going through the city and trying to help people and trying to, you know.
In the midst of combat with some really weird. All right. So I'm going to come into this and admit that I've never read any of the previous Spider-Girl, the ones that Tobin wrote. So how many of these like groups of villains that she's fighting are like from that run? Like the Wanda.
Some of it's from before.
Okay.
So, well, a lot of it's from before when she was Aranya, which was a while back. Yeah. Those weren't actually very good, but ever since then, it's been a lot better.
I'll say the interesting thing about Spider-Girl is that you can kind of tell the kind of stories with her that you used to be able to tell with Peter Parker.
Right.
And that you can't really anymore just because he's got so much baggage at this point. He's been around for such a long time.
He does.
But no, it's good. I mean, if you're interested in the Spider-Island stuff, I'd say that this is definitely worth checking out. It's not quite as good as the Cloak and Dagger thing that came out last week, but most things aren't. And it's a cool Spider-Girl comic.
And just leaping into it like I did, like I said, I haven't read the earlier ones. I found there's definitely some stuff like, oh, that's weird, and these guys are cool, and this is interesting. So
plus the end of this issue is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's definitely worth reading. Definitely worth checking out. We'll move on to one. Stuff of Legend, Jester's Tale by Mike Raked and Brian Smith, and art by Charles Paul Wilson III. I will say this is the third Stuff of Legend series.
Yeah, they're basically doing it as miniseries.
Yeah, the first one was just called Stuff of Legend. The second one was The Jungle. This is a cool book, but it's also the kind of thing that you can't just jump in and read. Or yeah. I didn't really feel like
I read. I read some of the earlier ones, but I've not kept up with it. And I tried reading this one because it's a number one. And while I got into the world about halfway through, there's definitely a lot in the beginning of like that. If you don't know what the first two books were or series, you just are very lost.
Yeah. The basic premise is there's this kid named Maxwell, and this is kind of his toys that he's sort of created a fantasy world for. And the basic premise is they're trying to defeat the boogeyman. And yep.
But it opens up with, you know, a roving ship battle between, you know, things on the high seas, and it might be good to know who these characters are and stuff.
It's like a dark Toy Story.
Yeah, which makes it sound terrible, but it's actually pretty good.
Yeah,
it's kind of the idea that you know, when you were a kid, the stories you made up with your toys were, you know, the best stories that you could ever want to hear. Yeah. And yeah, so it's kind of that. It's like high seas adventure, and it's cool, but definitely. I'd say if you're interested in the concept and interested in the idea, definitely check out the first volume.
Start with the beginning.
Yeah, because jumping into this, there's so much going on. I mean, the main thing of the kid, it's not even in the story. I mean, you wouldn't know about it.
I did not remember that part until you told me. I'm like, oh.
No, right. It's not in this book. So if you're a fan of Stuff Legend, hey, there's a new series out. Right. And if you're not, check out the first volume. So we just have one more, and that is the Wii 3 Deluxe Edition by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely.
Hell yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean...
So this is out of print in softcover right now, right?
I think so. I think it went out of print right before this hardcover came out. But
coincidence?
probably. but so, Jared, yeah, why don't you just tell people what Wii 3 is about?
All right, let's see if I can remember it.
It's been a long time ago.
So you've got a dog, a cat, and a rabbit.
Yes.
I remember that. We're basically even cybernetically engineered to be weapons.
Yep, that's pretty much the gist of it.
It's like Homeward Bound, but like incredibly violent.
If they were half cyborgs and had robot suits with weapons built into them.
It's like the incredibly violent Journey.
Yes.
It's like Milo and Otis.
Or the more even more incredible Journey.
It's like Dunstan Checks Out.
Dunstan Checks Out.
But, you know,
Grant Morrison. Like RoboCop versus Watership Down?
No.
No.
Or what's the other, like... Watership Down, the
Red Wall,
Plague Dogs.
Oh, that's the most depressing movie ever made.
Yeah, it's like Plague Dogs. It's a depressing thing about dogs and cats.
This is, so if you love cute animals, don't buy this book.
Yeah, that's definitely true. My wife, she loves cute animals, and I would never let her near this book.
It's awesome, though.
Yeah, it is awesome. And, you know, Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison, of course, they did...
they're awesome comics.
All-Star Superman.
And Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin. And they did...
JLA Earth 2.
JLA Earth 2, Flex Mentallo.
A few issues of New X-Men.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, here and there, like every 10th issue, I think. But, no, Wii 3, I mean, if you're fans of their stuff, it's definitely worth checking out. And it's a standalone story, which is always nice.
Right.
So if you're just looking for an original graphic novel to read, Wii 3 is definitely a good one.
And really, if you haven't read it by now, what have you done? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's definitely true.
But people might have missed it, because it did come out. As you can tell, we can barely remember the beginning of it. But yeah, it's amazing art.
Nick.
Yeah.
Don't be mean to people.
Whatever, you should have read this by now.
It's true. All right, so let's just go around the table, and what was everybody's favorite thing this week, Jared?
Oh, pressure. I love the setting the standard Toth book for the historical awesomeness of it. Like, this is stuff I have never seen before in my entire life. But it's also, the art's still amazing. The story is a little bit dated. There's a lot of Korean War comics and a lot of romance comics, which I think are actually really good. So I'll put that as my pick of bestest reprint.
Well, that's good enough. I mean, it came out this week, whatever.
Right. But no, I'm qualifying. I don't know.
All right, that's it for you. Nick, what was your favorite thing this week?
Actually, something we didn't actually talk about, but there was a Avengers Academy trade that came out, and I had the first six issues of it or so, and it was amazing.
Yeah, Avengers Academy is a great series if nobody's reading that.
It's my current favorite series. And
wow. Whoa.
Just let him say it's his favorite series. Okay. It's Nick's time to talk.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite superhero series because it's the most character-driven series that comes out, and it's, I mean, you know, there's almost every issue is a standalone story, and it's about these kids that are, you know, trying to decide whether they're going to end up being villains or heroes. And I mean, it's awesome. It's their relationships are really well built, and the art's always great. It's like Mike McCone, and I don't know. It's the best superhero thing coming out right now.
Yeah, it's very much like an old school comic in that there's basically a story in every issue. But there's a lot of character development that runs through the whole thing, and it's pretty awesome.
Such great payoff along further down the line after this. And if you haven't read it, I highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's a good book. All right, so my favorite book this week was The Invincible Compendium. Just as far as bang for your buck, I mean, Invincible is one of the best series coming out right now. And to be able to sit down and read the first 8 volumes just all at once, I'm kind of jealous of people that can do that.
That is ridiculous.
Because I had to wait years and years to read all of those. Yeah, yeah. But I will say, you don't have to wait years to listen to the next Big Planet Comics podcast, because we're going to do another one next week.
All right.
But that's it for this week. So, that is not it for this week.
Oh.
Because we've got a new segment.
Oh, yeah. We almost forgot. Let's do it.
Are we going to try to do this theme song thing?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. All right. Ready? I'll count it off. You ready? Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4. We're going to do the X.
Fail.
We totally failed. All right,
we're just trying to trick Kevin.
Yeah. That was a total fail thing. Basically, if you guys can come up with a good theme song for our X-Men segment, that was better than that, which is, I know, pretty tough. It's pretty tough to top that. But if you guys can do it, record it, send it into podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, and we'll use it as our X-Men theme song.
Yeah. Well, basically, what are we going to do?
We're going to go through the entirety of the X-Men cartoon from the 90s. We're going to watch an episode a week.
Not each week. We're going to go through one episode a week.
Right. We're going to go through one episode a week, and we're going to talk about it. So, this week we watched the first episode.
What was it called?
I have no idea.
Night of the Sentinel Part 1.
Night of the Sentinel Part 1.
This was the first episode?
This was the first episode.
Wow, what a lack of setup of anything.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't watched this, and it's all on Netflix streaming, so just watch it and then come back and listen to us talk about it. All right, welcome back.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, I hope you paused really fast. So in this first episode, the Sentinels are attacking.
Yeah.
And they capture Jubilee.
It starts with Jubilee, and she's like, her parents are like, oh, our daughter's a mutant. What are we going to do? And then there's
clearly register her.
Yeah. There's people on the news that are like, oh, mutants are a menace. We need to do something about this. And that's the basic start. And then she, obviously gets in trouble with Sentinels and meets up with the X-Men.
Yeah. So Jubilee gets captured by the Sentinels. Yeah.
Well, most importantly, meets up with them while every X-Men is shopping at the mall.
Oh, that's true. They are at the mall.
Yeah, Gambit's buying playing cards.
Yeah, they're at
hitting on shopkeepers.
Elizabeth's Secret.
They are
at the lingerie store. Gambit. He's talking to a Mon Cheri.
Yeah. Yes.
But he's not at Elizabeth's Secret shopping.
Oh, he is actually.
I thought he was buying playing cards at a different store.
Oh, he probably is. He's probably at a magic shop or something like that.
One of my favorite lines in this is Spider-Man. Gambit and Wolverine are fighting in the danger room, and Wolverine's about to stab Gambit, and he's like, say uncle.
I think my favorite line in this is when Morph goes
oh yeah, every time Morph shows up, he's like he turns into somebody else. He's like, oh, I'm president of the United States. He's like, after everything he says. Yeah, it's very annoying.
I did not like Morph's character at all. I think they should remove him from the show.
I don't want to spoil things, but some things will happen with Morph that will remedy that situation pretty soon.
Also, this show feels a little dated because in the first episode, Jubilee both destroys a VCR and an arcade machine.
No!
Two things that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, she's like Steve Jobs. I'll say this about the X-Men series. They were really true to the comics through the whole thing.
Yeah.
So watching the series, I feel like, for me, will be an X-Men education.
And it's not pandering to children. Like, there's lines about the Gambit's trying to pick up girls and
Well, it's still really stupid, though.
It's not pandering. It's not like they're not tripping over stuff and
they didn't dumb it down, is what you're saying.
Sentinels are actually trying to kill mutants, and
that might be my favorite line. It's what was it when the Sentinel first scanned someone as irrelevant and just walked away?
Unidentified mutant, irrelevant,
and irrelevant.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, well programmed there, Sentinels.
Although there's a great scene in this also where Jubilee is walking down the street and there's a Sentinel hiding behind the building, peeking around the corner, and she's like, oh, I didn't see that Sentinel.
It's completely ridiculous. It doesn't pander in the sense that they're actually using these storylines that were the early Chris Claremont stories that are pretty complicated. I know later on they do Days of Future Past.
I can't wait to see that,
and the Dark Phoenix Saga and some other
things.
It's
gonna be
great. Yeah
But basically, in this first episode, Jubilee gets caught by Sentinel and the X-Men go to save her, and at the very end of the episode they're like, what's behind this room? And you see that in the room there's a bunch of gunmen, and then
what? It ends. And then it ends.
Total cliffhanger.
It seemed really short to me.
Well, it was part one.
Oh.
But I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah. Oh, that was another of my favorite parts, is that the X-Men save Jubilee and take her back to the X-Men mansion. And then when she obviously escapes in this confusing house and is like, how do I get out of here? And starts trying to find her way out. They're like, intruder alert from the girl we just kidnapped as an intruder.
And then she gets kidnapped again by Sentinels.
They didn't have time to reprogram the alarm system.
That's true.
They were too busy fighting each Mr. other. Sinister. That didn't happen.
Not yet.
But I assume it does.
Oh, it does.
Because Mr. Sinister, he was really popular in the 90s.
Yeah, that does help.
Yeah.
He has a mustache.
Does he have a mustache?
Sort of. I don't know. Sometimes.
Forge has a mustache.
Oh, my God. Forge is in this.
Let's go around the table and name as many X-Men characters as we can.
From this episode?
Or.
To kill the podcast.
Or let's just end the podcast and come back next week.
All right.
All right.
See you
X-Men
guys later.
Episode 2 next week.
It'll happen. We'll see you guys.
Later, guys.
Bye.